magazine. It doesn't matter what show you tune in, it's hard to find on TV screen, but it's on the radio. Truth is on the radio.
I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, and today, on Friday, it is the 1st of September, folks, 2006. We're coming to you from the Best Western Capital Skyline Hotel in Washington, D.C. at the 2006 conference of, and this is actually the 5th International Conference of Real News, Authentic History, and the First Amendment. And there's a... Folks, there's a slew of good people here. I have a few minutes here while we scare up Willis Cardo. We've got Mike Blair here. Willis Cardo, he's the publisher of the Barnes Review. Harry Cooper, founder of Shark Hunters. Dale Crowley, evangelist, radio show host. Paul Frome, the Canadian free speech activist. Mark Glenn, Professor Ray Goodwin. Colonel Don The Grand Prix will not be here, I don't believe. He may show up in a day or so, but he was kind of under the weather. He's had some serious health problems. Ted Gunderson, I understand, is going to be here. Alice Hassinger, Tito Howard, USS Liberty researcher. Margaret Huffstickler, translator and a writer. Dave Von Kleist, just spoke to him in the cafeteria. He is here. Mark Lane, Fred Lechter, gas chamber expert. Steve Lynch, Mind Control Authority. Tex Mars will not be here. Tex Mars got bit by all things, a brown recluse spider. And we all know what that's like. So we wish him well. Say prayers for him, folks. As I said, Eustace Mullins is here. Ellen Mariani. Payman, and I always get this guy's name wrong. I think this is Montague, but I'll get a correction on that if I'm wrong.
Montague.
Okay. Eustace, go ahead. Sit right down right here.
Okay.
And get kind of close because we're using a little bit different piece of equipment. We're doing this by phone line today. Also, Chris Petherick. And I want to thank Chris for putting this thing on, getting this thing together, because this is important. Fifth conference here in Washington, D.C., and a lot of good people are here. So I appreciate his time and efforts. Of course, Michael Collins Piper, he is going to be following my broadcast here at the hotel. Dr. Harold Rome, William, and I guess it's okay to say this, Willie Rodriguez is going to be here. Doug Rocky, I also have him on the program today. Vince Ryan, he's the Readership Council of AFP, great guy. He's going to live forever, by the way, folks, 200 years at least. Joe Sobran is here, and, of course, I'm here. Victor Thorne, Dr. Frederick Tobin, which I had dinner with last night, Jim Tucker. Finally met Jim Tucker face-to-face the other day. And Lindsay Williams, I do believe, is going to be here, and Dr. Ingrid Zundel, the founder of the, we know the Zundel story, folks. It's been carried on this network quite a bit. Eustace Mullins, how you doing?
Oh, great. Looks like things are going to come great for this meeting.
I think so, too. I'll tell you what. We're just right into the break. Let's pick it up right after we come back.
Okay.
Okay. Hold on, folks. We'll be right back.
Ready for Real Talk Radio. You're listening to the National Intel Report with your host, John Stadtmiller.
All right, we are back, folks. We were rudely interrupted by, how did I once hear it? The rude, crass commercialism. We're here at the 2006 AFP TDR, the fifth international conference, and we're sitting here on speakerphone because technologically that's the best we could do here. We apologize for the echoey sound, but we'll plunge ahead. I'm sitting here with Eustace Mullins. Eustace, I remember a couple of years ago, Charlie Rose's program, Pat Robertson was on, talking about the book, The New World Order. And that all came about because of his association or college days with you?
No, it really came about because he hired a ghostwriter to do his own plagiarism of my book. And they all came after him about it. They looked at it and they said, this is all Eustace Mullins stuff. And he's become a publicist for Eustace Mullins. And that's why they went after him, because he was using my stuff. But he was using it because he was stealing it, not because I was working with him.
Well, and of course, Pat Robertson sat there. And I actually was embarrassed, Eustace, for Pat Robertson. I mean, Rose just sat there and hammered it. It was merciless the way he did it. And he kept calling you Eustace Mullins and kept saying that you were anti-Semitic. And Pat Robertson came back with, he said, well, I didn't have the chance. There's hundreds of people in my book, and I didn't have the chance to do all the background on them. So
the whole book was fine. There wasn't hundreds of people. I was the only one.
So what? In your estimation, I mean, just for a little history, past, what's the deal with Pat? Does he have too much to protect? What's going on with this guy?
Pat is his father's son, and his father, A. Willis Robertson, a congressman from Virginia, was the chief lackey for the old Harry Byrd Rothschild organization in Virginia.
So it goes back a ways. Of course, Pat has his dynasty that he has to protect. His son is taking over more and more the project that he started. But I think the man has too much to lose. He's still in there playing the game. And it's getting kind of late in the day to be doing that.
Well, his son, Tim, is not going to help him very much. But he tried to take over for him when he ran for president. And he was a total botch at it. Pat almost lost his whole program, and he had to rush back and take back the program.
So it scared a lot of people to have the new paradigm of the religious right in there running for president. I got to be honest, folks. I don't hold Pat Robertson in high regard. He and his diamond mines and whatever else. His stance on abortion in China. China has too many people. Yeah, they need birth control.
Boy, that's kind of hard.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to flip-flop and waffle on issues, you know, I guess. But and aside from all of that, now you've been doing this, Eustace, and how many books have you written on the Federal Reserve?
Oh, just one.
Been around?
I've written on many other subjects. I've been written on the history of law, the history of medicine, the Curse of Canaan, the record of demonology and world history.
And you're best known, though, for your book on the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, that was, I was introduced to that subject by Ezra Pound in the Insane Asylum in Washington, which overlooks the city, you know.
And Ezra Pound, what exactly did Ezra Pound? I heard a little bit of his story, but for the benefit of the audience that may not know the story, what happened with Ezra Pound that got you on this track?
Well, Ezra got on this track after World War One, when so many of his young artists, writers, friends were killed in World War One, and he began to ask why they died. And when he looked into it, he found it was only the bankers that started the war for profit. And that got Ezra off and running right into the money situation.
And Ezra left us when?
72. He was 87.
And was he still in jail?
No, I got him out in 58.
Okay, well, that's why I'm asking the history on it.
Well, you see, I took an old newspaper man named Rex Lampman to see him at the hospital, who was also a patient. And it was strictly forbidden for one patient to visit another, because if two patients got together, they could take over the hospital.
which same thing will happen in the United States. The lunatics have taken over the asylum. So they're worried about that. But Rex and Ezra hit it off perfectly. And so Rex said to Ezra, "You don't belong in here." And Ezra said, "Well, I know that." And Rex said, "I'm going to do something about it," because he knew everybody in Washington. He was very influential here. And so he went to the congressman from North Dakota, whom his father had put in office, and he said, "I want you to do something for Ezra Pound." So this congressman went on the floor of Congress, and he asked the question. He said, "Why is the government holding this man?" Well, they didn't want to admit why they were holding him, so they dropped all the charges, and Ezra walked out of the hospital.
And it was wholly and solely on the issue of the Federal Reserve?
Yeah.
To shut him up?
They didn't want Congress talking about the Federal Reserve.
Now, throughout the years, there's been some very interesting statements made about the Fed Reserve. Henry Gonzalez, when he was the head of the Banking Committee, the panel the committee in Washington, D.C., there have been other people who have alluded to that. Ron Paul from Texas.
Oh, Ron Paul is right on target.
Jim Trafficant, which I do believe the man is in jail for kind of probably the same similar reasons why Ezra Pound.
Oh, yes, indeed. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. So they're real scared, but there's a problem. The United States Congress and their power and the United States Senate does not control America out here. And America is waking up at a more rapid pace nowadays about the scam of the Federal Reserve than ever before. So what are these people in Washington going to do? Hide in their bunkers, in their holes?
Well, they have nowhere to go because this is their home. When you come to Washington, you never go home again because they can't go back home. And so they have no home anywhere. The Washington Congress is the homeless people. It's like the Bowery in Washington, D.C. They're homeless. They have nowhere to go.
Well, and it's many more people starting this month. You're familiar with Aaron Russo?
Oh, yes.
And his movie, America, Freedom, the Fascism?
Oh, yes. I was in Richmond with a couple of people who are promoting it all over the country.
Well, that's going to be re-released. Next week I'm actually going to have, not next week, I think it's the week after, Danny might want to reprise me that after the during the break here, but he's re-releasing that film, and it got some pretty good reviews and raves from a lot of people. And this is what I'm saying. You know, America is starting to wake up. Mainstream America that they've wanted so desperately to keep dumb is starting to wake up, and I don't know what the damage control boy is going to do here in Washington, D.C., but they're in trouble now.
Oh, they're in trouble. You see, for the last 5 years when I've come to Washington, I found that this empty, vacant feeling. You get here and you see, I grew up in Washington. I grew up on Capitol Hill. And there used to be the government here. And when you come here today, the government is not here. What happened to the government? There's no government here because it's the Federal Reserve System at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. That is the government.
That is the controlling interest and factor.
Oh, yes.
Well, it's almost, and correct me if I'm wrong, Eustace, but it is almost anymore. I mean, we're seeing, forget using terms like burgeoning national debt. You know, they just raised the limit on the national debt, and I think it was to $9 trillion, but that is not the real national debt. We are somewhere in the hole. I've heard estimates up to $150 trillion in the hole.
Oh, yes.
What's the numbers you've been hearing that you've been able to...
Well, I haven't heard of quite that high, but they're up there.
Yeah.
But the problem is a gang of counterfeiters took over the United States in 1913, and they took over from the United States Treasury. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 removed the Department of the Treasury as the fiscal agent of the United States and gave it to private bankers, and the Federal Reserve System has been their fiscal agent of the United States since 1913, which means that all loans and mortgages incurred since 1913 are phony because the government of the United States said of it.
What happens, because we all know the eventual end of this, the dollar has lost 97% of its buying power, its purchasing power. It's worth about 3 cents, and when I say cents, I mean copper wash zinc. They don't even make pennies out of copper anymore. When this thing blows and when it finally collapses, what do you see immediately happening afterwards?
Well, it'd be like when they revalued the mark in Germany currencies come and go. They're like civilizations, and this currency is ready to go. And what they're going to put in its place, I don't know. But I knew when I wrote my Federal Reserve book in 1949 that this was, the system would have to be replaced. And I've been waiting to see what happens. It's really fascinating because they have not got anything to replace it with.
Except maybe another fiat system. But
well, a fiat system, that's all I know.
In 1949, when you wrote on the Federal Reserve then, we didn't know about the Free Trade Area of Americas. We had an indication that they wanted global government. They had been talking about it for a number of years, but we really didn't see, you know, the formation as yet of the European Union. Now George Bush with Vincente Fox and Prime Minister of Canada last year putting the final touches on the Free Trade Area of America deal. If the dollar gets ready to blow out, they can just pop up with a brand new currency, revalue it, and call it the Ameri-dollar versus the euro. They can do whatever they want. They are going to be forced to reinstitute another funny money system, aren't they?
That's all the way we can go. Because a gang of counterfeiters took over this country in 1913, and this gang of counterfeiters has created this entire situation where we have no money.
All right. Well, folks, we've got to take this break. We'll be right back with Eustace Mullins. And we're here at the 5th International Conference on, well, this is happening thanks to AFP. And we'll be right back. Stay there. Interrupt us here in Washington, D.C. If nobody's been paying attention, we have a tropical depression, I think, just about on top of us by now. At any rate, we apologize for the break in the program, but you know what? It happened during a break, so you probably didn't notice it that much. We are sitting here talking with Eustace Mullins. He wrote his book on, and it's one of the best books. It was the first book in 1949 that was written by the Federal Reserve. And there are a lot of people in this country of the opinion that that is the major, major issue here in this country. Would you disagree with that?
No, indeed, because it was really backed by the person who first told me about the Federal Reserve System, and that was the poet Ezra Pound. And he told me about this in the insane asylum, St. Louis Hospital here in Washington. And so I used to tell my audiences for years I got my education in the insane asylum, which is actually true. I went to 7 universities, and I didn't learn anything. Then I walked out at St. Elizabeth to visit Ezra Pound, and he told me the whole history of the world.
Coming from an insane asylum, I'm just thinking the staff and the psychiatrists and psychologists on staff at that mental hospital probably thought he was nuts.
Oh, absolutely not. Ezra was the most rational person you could ever talk to in your life. He had 3,800 visitors during his 13 years there, and of those 3,800 visitors, not one ever said that he was irrational. He used to talk to me 3 hours a day.
Well, when we arrived a few days earlier. We did the tourist thing here at the in Washington, D.C., with the with the pentagram people here in Washington. But I ran into people. There was a I shan't say young woman, but there was a woman that was right parked right across from the White House. She has been there since 1981. I have her information. I'll have to dig it out. But she's been there since 1981 talking about Israel and the problems that are associated. And my wife and I were standing there, and a young couple walked up. And I was fascinated. I was fascinated because the one thing that came out of this man's mouth is he looked at me and he said, you're loony. You're crazy. You're just." And I looked at him, and he said, "You're one of the wackos."
Yeah, that's the first thing they said.
Well,
nobody ever said that to me, by the way, in 60 years.
So if 3,800 people visited your friend Ezra Pound over 13 and a half years, and the staff at the hospital didn't think the guy was nuts.
No, they didn't. Absolutely not.
Why is it that today, Eustace, that people think when we talk about this, I mean we, because we're the successive generation from you, and hopefully we can educate the generation coming up to carry this fight on. Why are we getting back from people in this country that we're some sort of wackos when we're talking about absolute provable fact?
Well, that's the media. The media says he's a wacko. And they say that any person who touches on the truth is a wacko. That's our standard answer.
Well, aside from the media, has the programming worked so well on the American people?
Well, I don't know, because the programming, I don't think the programming works well at all, because all these children who go for 15 years of education and they come out, they're totally untouched by it. This propaganda has very little influence on children, because children are natural, and they instinctively reject this nonsense.
So you're saying their programming is breaking down?
Boy, I don't think it ever got started. I went to public school, and the only thing I found out of public school is I had 4 years of Latin. And I learned language because I studied Latin for 4 years.
Well, the public school system of your day and also my day, we still said the Pledge of Allegiance. We still learned about the Constitution, what our form of government was supposed to be, which they're not teaching that anymore.
No, no.
They're just making them little cookie-cuttered global citizens.
It is indeed.
But here is the future and the hope of our country, Eustace. And we've got to find better ways to get through to these young people, because it's one thing to reject, as you said, it's one thing to reject the programming, but it's another thing to fill these children's heads with the truth and the facts.
They want the facts. The children want to know what's going on. And this is why children have so little respect for adults, because the adults only give them nonsense. And children do not want to hear nonsense. They can go to Disney Pictures to get all of that. They don't need it from their adults.
We'll take the break here, folks. We got a few more minutes to spend with Eustace Mullins. I appreciate it, spending the time, and I especially appreciate this man, part of our current history, folks, coming into Washington, D.C. for this wonderfully sponsored, the 2006 AFP-TBR 5th International Conference. And we'll continue right after this break.
You're tuned in to the National Intel Report, the Real Talk Radio Show.
Talk about Arnold Leist, and I guess Arnold's from England, correct?
He was an English veterinarian who became the world authority on recovery.
There we go. All right, guys, you have a pot or something open back there. Close it down. All right, do you have me? Okay, great. All right, I'm sorry, Arnold Leist?
So Arnold Leist wrote the definitive book called Jewish Ritual Murder, which has been in print now for about 75 years. And so I was in Chicago at the time working with Ms. Van Hining at Women's Voice, and she and Arnold were very close. So they had a murder of some German boys in Chicago, and they found their bodies on the trash heap. And so she found out that they were murdered by a guy from the sheriff's department of the city of Chicago. So So she started running stories about it, and she sent on release by air mail the stories of these murders. And he came back, right, and it was a typical ritual murder. And so she sent all the Chicago Daily News stories about these children, and a whole sheaf of stuff. She sent him everything. And so when he got the package, he mysteriously died. And that was the end of Arnold East. But his book is still available.
What do you attribute your longevity, Eustace?
I've been on the run as a hunting man for the last 60 years. And that's why they had been on the internet from January to June. I was missing. No one knew where I was. And the reason they didn't know where I was, and none of the informants, I never told any of the informants where I was going.
So to them you were missing. To everybody else, you were still around.
Well, I still was in public, and I was still doing talk shows, and I was very much in public. So I was never hiding. I was hiding out with some friends in Upper Ohio for a while, but I was never really missing. But Kaminsky went on the internet and said I was missing.
Right.
And it started a nationwide panic. Eustace Bullis is missing. And I was never missing for a day.
And here he is, alive and in the flesh. Well, Eustace, I appreciate you coming in. I appreciate you coming to this conference. And the much-needed groundwork and the years of your dedication to this subject matter and also your other great writings. If people want to get copies of your books, where can they go?
Oh, I'm at my home at 126 Madison Place. And that's Stanton, Virginia, 24401. Everything will reach me at that address.
All righty. And it's 126 Madison Place.
Yes.
And that's Stanton, Virginia, 22401. So all they have to do is drop you a line?
That's right. I got a call at midnight last night that people wanted my books. I just came in from another meeting, and the phone rang, and I was a guy ordering books at midnight.
Do you have a number you want to put out?
No, because they can call me anyway. I mean, they got to reach me actually by mail.
Okay.
They have to mail in the order.
All right.
So it has to come there.
All right. So there it is, folks. Eustace, thank you. I appreciate it very much.
I'm glad to be here.
All righty. Thank you. Eustace Mullins, folks. You know, it's...